But this is an issue that we will continue to press. Another program in the department is the what's called the Executive Order Program. This applies to all government contractors and subcontractors who have a contract of at least $10,000 with the United States government. It prohibits discrimination based on sex. Sex was added in 1968. And it also requires affirmative action, some aggressive outreach to bring women into the system. It also requires larger contractors, those having a contract of $50,000 or more, to prepare what we call an affirmative action plan. And this requires that the company look at its workforce, see whether or not women are underutilized, and if they are, set goals and timetables for correcting that underutilization. I think it's an important program because it forces the company to look at what it's doing. I don't like to make the assumption that all companies purposely discriminate. I think many of them are simply unaware of the kind of trends that have developed in their operation. That program was not effectively enforced by the government. We have tried to turn that around. One problem with the program is that the compliance, the inspectors, the people who go out and find the violations, are dispersed throughout the government, each one working for the various contracting agencies, such as the Department of Defense, the Department of Education, General Services Administration. And we feel that the inspector is more concerned with getting the jet plane built than with who builds it. And we have proposed that these 1,900 inspectors be brought within the Office of Federal Contract Compliance, which is the agency that has monitored the executive order, and that it be placed in one agency and thereby made more effective. Since the new administration, we have debarred three major contractors, including one. As you may know, Congress in 1974 passed a pension law, which we administer, which was designed to correct the most flagrant abuses. It wasn't entirely satisfactory to women because it still permits breaks in service, which almost all women experience because of pregnancy. And it also continues to permit men employees to choose a single option pension. This has been, I think, perhaps the greatest cause of poverty among widowed women. They're in their 50s. They haven't worked in the job market for 25 years. They still have children in school. The husband dies, and the pension that he selected was a single option pension, which means that it expires with his death. We did propose to Congress this spring that the law be amended to give the woman the right to demand a survivorship option. There's also some very interesting litigation going on in California, which gets to the question of what happens when a woman is divorced. One of the great inequities of our pension and Social Security system, indeed, one of the inequities of the whole homemaker status, is that property acquired during the marriage does not belong equally to the woman, and this is true of pensions, so that if she's divorced, she loses what would have been her Social Security based on her husband's employment. Now, that has been changed if you stay married at least 20 years, but it doesn't help the woman who's divorced after 19 years. Nor does it help, since Social Security is a very small pension, doesn't give the woman any protection in her husband's private pension. And there is a great deal of litigation in the California divorce and family courts where women are claiming their right to a pension at the time of a divorce. And I think that's something we'll be very interested in. I think at this point, because even though we started late, we don't want all the sessions to be late, I will stop But I would, if I am allowed, take questions. Yes. Those are both very good points. You're quite right that volunteer work often gives the woman more experience than men competing for the same work. Indeed, the people who've organized this convention, you just think of the massive amount of management required to do that. And this has been a problem. There's very little that the federal government can do about it. I think we need to educate the business community. I think they're not aware of, they think of women's groups as bridge clubs and aren't aware of the kind of organizational skills acquired. We are concerned in the apprenticeship jobs where we have a little bit more control, that companies ought not to be able to disregard military experience. They ought not, if you want to become a journeyman cook, which pays a lot more money than a non-journeyman cook, you ought to be able to count all your cooking experience in the home. So we are looking at these things, but I don't think we've done nearly enough. You had your other question, and it's job sharing. Senator Humphrey had a bill last year which would require government to set aside at least 10% of its jobs for part-time work, which isn't quite job sharing, but does increase the opportunities for women who still have to worry about the children. Of course, daycare is something very dear to our hearts and to the Women's Bureau, and we have quite a good daycare center at the department, thanks to the Women's Bureau. I think the whole question of the quality of jobs, this is something that Congressman Lundeen has gotten into. We have testified on it. We are thinking about it. Before we began, we were talking about restructuring jobs. So many women are in dead-end jobs and are given silly, pointless tasks when their work could be developed into something much more meaningful and could be used as a stepping stone to other careers. One thing we've done in the legal profession is paralegals. And we did not in the government take college graduates who had gone to paralegal school. We took our own secretaries who had demonstrated the capability of dealing with law and sent them to school. And they now have GS-11s, which are very good salaries in the government. Also into the personnel field. You could track a lot of secretaries and clerical people into personnel, and you could just make secretarial jobs more interesting and more demanding. And although that's not quite job sharing, I think of it in the same light. Now, Sweden has experimented with job sharing. I'm told that it hasn't been entirely successful because the men continue to be the ones to take the job and the women continue to stay at home even though the law gives them the right to share. Are there other questions?
Yes. First, I want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
If we put as much energy and education into being a nurse, you may
right.
Nurses don't want to do nursing, I'll tell you that right now. They want to be a midwife or a doctor or whatnot, and that keeps the word nurse down. And I'm very pleased you use the word paralegal, because this gave me a chance to say paraphysician.
I'm glad you did. I meant to say it, because I have a dentist who has a paradentist. And when I first started there 15 years ago, she was a technician, I guess. She assisted. And she's been going to school, and now, you know, she does a good three-quarters of the work and is very excited about it. And they have a little group in Washington made up of women technicians to become paradentists. Now, I also, when you said that, sort of, if I can just take a few more minutes, It reminded me of a very successful program we have going in North Carolina, and I've written down your idea, because there, this was a CETA program, and we took young women who were on welfare, and they were 19 to 24. They had no skills. They had mostly not finished high school. And all they knew was how to take care of their children and their house. And we assigned them to, and paid them a salary, to one older individual who was completely bedridden or unable to take care of himself. These were basically poor people. This meant that they did not have to go to a state institution. They could stay in their little home. And the women, for the first time in their lives, these girls are needed. You know, they are somebody important. The secretary went down to talk to them, and he likes to play devil's advocate. So one gal had two patients. The husband was blind and diabetic, and the woman was dying of cancer. They were both in their late 70s. And he said, well, that must really be unpleasant work, you know, cleaning up after those people. Who would want to do work like that? And the young gal got so mad, you know, and said, you know, she was important. Another young gal had been there when her woman had died. And she said, you know, I was, at that moment, I was the most important person in the world to that woman. And that had never happened to me before. The plus side of the story is that two of those women have now enrolled in a licensed practical nursing school. Three have gotten their high school equivalency exam. Now, I think we could take that a bit further and add in the paraphysicians and really send these kids into a whole new career pattern that 2 years ago would have been impossible for them.
Then number two, I feel this way, that women, we are our own worst enemy, say the mother, because we start with training the child that the man is the paramount, that if the boy is too weak, say you want to work, you know, he sort of sits back. So is there any way that motherhood starts training? We condition ourselves as women to train them. I know what I'm saying, but I'm not really bringing it out. The working conditions where this is a man's job,
right.
This is a woman's job.
Role models are absolutely critical. You know, we're all trained, we're trained from birth as to our proper place. I always liked the commercial that Now used to run. They would show a pretty little girl baby, and they would say, this baby is handicapped, she is female. And the state of Texas, as a matter of fact, has been one of the leaders in going through their textbooks trying to take out the sex stereotyping. And, of course, that's not a federal law. You'd have all kinds of First Amendment complaints, but I think more and more state school systems are looking at that. I saw a movie once prepared by some Harvard psychologists where you saw children, you wouldn't know whether they're a boy or girl, and you saw the legs of adults. And just in the way they were communicating with those children, the games they handed them, you could tell, you know, which adult was male and which was female and which child was male and which was female. And unconsciously, no matter how liberated we are, we do this. TV drives me crazy. That I don't know if any of you have ever watched Medical Center, Joe Gannon. And they had this one show where the woman doctor, this famous surgeon, came to the hospital. And turned out her husband had been a famous surgeon. They'd worked together in Africa. And now that she'd lost her husband, of course, she just became emotionally unglued. She was killing her patients. You know, Joe Gannon had to step in and save everybody. And when they finally have a woman doctor on TV, what an image to give it. This is just something that all of us have an obligation to go out and give children, our children, other people's children, a positive image about what women can do. And that gets to your question of what can we do about the pay rates of female jobs. Because look what happened to teaching. When during Vietnam, all the men that didn't want to be drafted went into teaching. The salaries tripled. And it's one thing we tried to do in AT&T. We required male operators. I've noticed lots of male operators. I don't think their salaries have improved. But the best way to improve salaries is to integrate the jobs. I don't want to encroach on the time of others, but I'll be around if any of you have questions.
Could I add a very depressing story since paramedics have been spoken about so much? I work in the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, and even though I'm working in the education division right now, I used to work at the department level at a position where I heard about what was going on in different professions. And after the Vietnam War, the paramedics became very popular, and they decided at the same time that the legal profession was decided, there are certain things that we do that somebody with a little bit of training could do. They decided the same thing. Did they turn around and look at the nurses? No. They turned out at people that had been paramedics in the armed services, and guess who those were? And they now earn, as a starting salary, $14,000 and $15,000. Look at the program in George Washington University. So it is very important that the nursing profession look at this and stop it before paramedics become widespread and they have their bastion there.
Okay.
And a woman is secretary. That's right. I think we're running into a problem that we're going to run throughout the day, that each one of our speakers, instead of an hour, 45 minutes because we started a bit late, we could be speaking too for the whole morning at least. Thank you very much, Ms. Klaus. If you all would like to stand up and stretch a little while Ms. Latimer